MIN Files, the ultimate Vikings podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garafolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The Big Interview.
It is time to talk Vikings. We're going to do that with Viking Update. That's how you find them on Twitter, at Viking Update. John Holler is our guest. John, let's start here. We can dive into the individual personnel groups over the course of the game and how they performed, but overall has to feel pretty good to have pulled off a win, especially in the fourth quarter there against the Titans on the road.
Yeah, you know, especially given the circumstances that the Vikings were under, losing Teddy Bridgewater 8 days before the start of the regular season, it left things very much up in the air. And, you know, if the people saw that game, that is pretty indicative of the Mike Zimmer teams that we've had in Minnesota for the last 2 years, where it's defense dominated. And if you take Adrian Peterson away, they have to struggle to win. And I'm not sure anybody would have predicted two returns for touchdowns by the defense. But it's one of those. Tennessee was a team that appeared beatable because they have so many new component parts there. And the Vikings are coming with the veteran team under Coach Zimmer. And they put it together defensively in the second half, but that first half was pretty atrocious.
John, when you look at the stats, not that Tennessee was a you know, powerhouse defense by any stretch, but it's got to be a good feeling for the Vikings offensively, especially in the trenches, that Sean Hill was not sacked.
Right. And, you know, he was told to, when they made the trade for Sam Bradford, it raised a lot of eyebrows because a first rounder and a conditional fourth rounder seems like a pretty hefty price to pay if you're expecting Teddy Bridgewater back next year. But when he came in, he had to learn a completely new playbook. And Sean Hill's been in the system for 2 years now. And he only came in mop-up duty last year. So there was never really much of a sense of, can he run this offense? And they were asking him to simply manage the game and not make the mistake that kills him. And everybody I talked to who's dealt with Sean in Detroit and St. Louis, they both said, this guy's a gamer. He's a tough guy. You know, don't let the fact that he hasn't started since 2014 and only has 34 career starts in 15 years play into it. He is a guy who can lead a team on offense. And he did what they wanted him to do. He stood tall in the pocket, took some shots, and there never seemed to be any of that panic. So while it does look like they're going to turn it over to Sam Bradford here this week, I think it gave the entire offense a lot of confidence knowing that the next time they need Sean Hill, he can come in and produce for them.
Well, going into the season prior to the Bridgewater injury, there were a lot of people that had high expectations on Stephon Diggs, and clearly it doesn't matter who's under center. His talent level seems to rise. 9 targets, 7 catches, 103 yards. Are those the kind of numbers that you expect out of Diggs regardless of the quarterback?
Not consistently those numbers. When Steph came up last year, he sat out the first 3 games, just was inactive. And when they did bring him in, nobody was putting their number one corner on him. And he had that first month, he was just lights out. And once defenses started putting their top corner on him and sliding safeties over on him, his numbers kind of took a hit. But he's got some of the best hands I've ever seen in Minnesota. And when you consider that I've seen guys like Chris Carter and Randy Moss, who had arguably the greatest 4 hands this side of Larry Fitzgerald, he's a talent, but I think the reason why he excelled so much yesterday was due in large part to them just completely selling out on stopping Adrian Peterson.
Well, and clearly they did. Adrian Peterson with only 31 yards on the ground. Is that a red flag for you, or is that just a, hey, it's a bad week and we move on to the next one?
It's not a red flag to me, because last year, I'm sure a lot of people remember that season opener on Monday night, the second part of the doubleheader playing San Francisco. He had 31 yards in that game too, and ended up winning the rush title. He's a guy that if you are going to totally sell out to stop him, he can get stopped. And he never plays in the preseason, so there's always that little bit of a shaking off the rust sort of a thing with Adrian. If you look back, he hasn't had a 100-yard rushing game in the opener since 2008. And ironically, it's been the last 5 years that he hasn't even played in the preseason. So it's, those numbers don't alarm me all that much. But if it's going against a team like a Green Bay or a Detroit or Chicago who are in the division, you hate seeing a guy get off to a slow start like that, because he is the centerpiece of the offense, and I think everybody pretty much knows that coming in.
When you look at the receiving core for Bradford slash Hill, and I guess that's kind of how I have to look at it right now until Bradford officially takes over. So often in a receiving core, you're looking for that wide receiver two. You're looking for the one that takes the pressure off your number one or what have you. But in this case, it really feels like it's actually the tight end Kyle Rudolph that is the one that takes the pressure off. Do you see it that way? And is he do you see him continuing to have 7, 8, maybe even 10 targets per game?
Rudolph is a, you know, when you have Norv Turner coaching, there are plenty of plays in the playbook in which the tight end is the primary first option. And Rudolph has been able to mix in well with Christian Ponder, Matt Cassel, Teddy Bridgewater. It doesn't matter who they put out there. It seems like there are always plays dialed up to get him free down the middle of the field. And his only problem through his career has been injuries, that he gets nagging injuries that slow him down and limit the number of plays that he has. If he can ever put a full 16-game season together, he could be one of those guys who catches the 70, 80 passes for 1,000 yards. He's never going to be a Rob Gronkowski, but he could provide, so say, what a Tyler Eifert does in Cincinnati.
John, you talked about the defensive touchdowns and the performance of the defense. Was that just because this is a down Titans team, or is this defense emerging as one of the best in the league?
Seeing it on a weekly basis, I tell you, it took, when Coach Zimmer came in 2014, he needed to get the players to buy into what he does, because it's more of a collective than it is going out for your individual self. There's no freelancing allowed in Coach Zimmer's defense. And if you look back last year, in the 17 games that they played, including the playoff game with Seattle, they only allowed more than 2 touchdowns once all last year. And that was when they got blown out by Seattle when they had both of their starting safeties and one of their starting cornerbacks out, and Russell Wilson took advantage of that. But this is a team that if you only allow 2 touchdowns a game, the scores are going to be 17, 20, somewhere in there. And the Vikings are a team that is predicating themselves on defense, that they're not going to allow a lot of points. And if you can score 2 or 3 touchdowns yourself, you're going to win games. And, you know, a lot of people point to Teddy Bridgewater's numbers saying, you know, anybody could come in and throw for 3,000 yards and 14 touchdowns. But it was the design of the way that the Vikings play, where it's get off the field on defense and play a game of field position. And they were able to do it very well last year. And I think a lot of people are kind of sleeping on that, because when you look at it from the outside, it's one of those, well, they beat the teams they should have beat. They lost to the teams that were better than them. And that was a pretty consistent thing last year. But for so many years, Minnesota's had a problem winning on the road, and especially winning on the road in the division. And they were able to come away with wins against all 3 of their divisional opponents on the road this past season. So they're on the uptick. And I think it was the defense, the talent that they have, that forced the hand of the front office to make the move and give up a first round pick to get a guy like Sam Bradford, because they didn't want to end the season saying, we have this great defense, but if we don't have enough offense to compete, what's the point?
John, is this the perfect storm this upcoming weekend? You combine a brand new stadium with a division rival with Sunday night football. I mean, I kind of feel like this is everything coming together at once for the Vikings fans. Sunday night's going to be insane, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's a must-have ticket around here. They probably could have sold 250,000 tickets for this game. They could have filled up any soccer stadium in the world for this one, because the rivalry between the Vikings and Packers is just intense at all times. You know, there are, if a team is down, they're like, if we only win two games a year, if it's against the Packers, fans would be fine with it. And the combination, because they've had two preseason games in there, and I watch around on the NFL Network when they're showing other preseason games, and you're seeing half full houses, you know, tens of thousands of people disguised as empty seats. And for those first two games, especially the fourth preseason game, shocked me that there were 60,000 people at a meaningless fourth preseason game. And it was loud. And I can only imagine I'm wearing earplugs on Sunday night, because it is going to be, it's going to be interesting to see how it comes over on TV, because Coach Zimmer and the guys have already been whipping up the fans that they can make the difference. If you ever heard a game in the Metrodome, they'd always pull out that decibel meter where it sounds like a plane taking off. And there's something about the acoustics in this building that I just have a feeling it's going to be like leaving a Who concert. And you're like, you know, your ears are ringing for about an hour after you leave the building.
Not only leaving the concert, but leaving those seats right in front of the speakers. I've been in those seats before, and sometimes those are really loud, John. That's the stuff that leaves you ringing forever. He's John Haller from Viking Update. You find him on Twitter, at Viking Update. Make sure you're following him and keeping track of what's happening with the Vikings. And, of course, the excitement of this upcoming Sunday night game, the official opening regular season of the stadium, and, of course, a huge divisional rival game against the Packers. John, appreciate the time. Thanks.
You're more than welcome anytime.
That's John Haller talking Vikings with us. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device, or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, you know, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17 to 35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. And so, yeah, we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road, and it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They, too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First, for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. For them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. You had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City. If nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd and, oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hand.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display, now that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake here.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.